This is Andrew Samuels, March 23rd, 1991. Fathers, tape 1 of 3.
Next stop, San Francisco, has been a popular demand. Last night we actually had to tell them to be quiet because we had to get out of the King Hall with so much conversation going. The author of several books, which I haven't memorized, but one is Total Psyche, and we have it all here tonight. And today, excuse me. Very pleased to have you here. I know I'm still there. So, thank you again for coming, and welcome.
And we'll... Thank you. Thank you.
Hello.
Perhaps you could do that in the break. Before I came to the United States for the very first time on a professional visit, I had never heard the term workshop. And I have learned such a lot about how people can work together by doing workshops, mostly here, but indeed all over the world. It's an extraordinarily democratic and productive way of doing things, but it does need a lot of two-way energy, frankness, openness, and so forth. And I hope we can achieve that. It'll certainly be helped by the remarkably nice surroundings that there are here. Jung said that every psychology is a personal confession. I've been writing, thinking, feeling about the father for a long time now, and indeed I had to do that before I could become a father myself. So my interest in this theme is highly personal. I imagine this is not necessarily untrue for other people here, but I wanted to begin by saying that. What am I trying to do? I'm not trying to give you a didactic day that would look at Freud, Jung, Klein, Mahler, Winnicott, Lacan, etc. You can really get that from books. I want to do something else. I want to try to claim, or rather reclaim, the father as a positive and progressive player in the family drama and in the social and political dramas. As I start to map out my workshop on drama, need a few more chairs. Welcome. I guess they'll take the money. But I'll recap, but if anyone else comes late, I'll just keep going. That seems a fair compromise, right? Basically, I said that, like anyone else, working in the field of psychological theory, it's a personal matter, and I have to start thinking and write about the father, which I've been 20 years now, before I could be a father. and then I was about to move into what the goal of the workshop is, which is that it's not a didactic presentation of psychological theories about the father. The only theorizing that is my own, my friend. And in that theorizing, what I'm trying to do is to reclaim the father as a positive, progressive player in both the family drama and the social or political drama in which we're all involved. Now, this is particularly important because the negative father is a very well-known phenomenon. And the positive father is only usually known in his idealized form, a kind of sugary perfection, lacking real flesh and blood presence. The negative father certainly doesn't lack flesh and blood presence. You just think for one second about Freud's ideas, with which you must be familiar, that Freud's father is almost exclusively castrating, prohibitive, negative, and so forth. So I started to wonder when I thought about Freud's father and the father that psychology presents generally, I started to wonder where was the politically progressive father? And I began to see that if you look at paternal imagery and experiences of the father in a certain kind of way, you will see that there is a hidden subversive streak in this parent, apparently the more reactionary of the two parents. In other words, what I'm trying to tease out here is a subversive, revolutionary version of the father, the positive father, which he's trying to get in. Now, focusing on the father brings up the possibility that what I'm saying might be experienced as somehow anti the mother. And I'm not sure that one can do very much about that. I'm not consciously anti-mother or anti-maternal psychology. But inevitably, there are these two gigantic parental imagos, and anybody who tries to work the field to do with one of them is going to seem, and be psychologically that he is, taking part in a competition. And I think there is a gigantic competition between the two parents. But I've known in my own professional life, when I start to focus on the father, which shows me what a professional is, and it's a very unusual thing to do still, older colleagues will sometimes say, oh, it's Andrew's mother problem. That's why he loves his father. It's been very difficult. It's easier now, but when I started this in the early to mid-80s, it was much, much more difficult. Now, because several of you weren't around last summer, I need to tell you just a few words about what I mean by political, when I talk about the father as a player, a subversive player in a political drama. I mean issues of power, on the one hand, in the public sphere. But I also mean issues of empowerment in the private domestic sphere and in the inner world. Because after all, the father moves in the inner family and in the inner society as much as he does in the outer family and the outer society. So that I'm very concerned with power, but I'm concerned mostly with the intersection of public power and private power issues. And I think the father is absolutely critical to that. So there is a linkage here between last night's lecture about politics and today's workshop about the father, for those of you who didn't know that. As you will see in a moment, you can't really address the father. You shouldn't address the father without having the bodily dimension in mind. The father's body. The reason for this will become clear as the day moves on. Why I'm bringing it in now is to alert you to my motivation for asking you, as I'm going to do, to participate in certain exercises of an experiential kind throughout the day. Maybe I should have warned you, but that's a trickster, isn't it? I'll tell you why. Part of it is to counteract the received wisdom about the father, that he's all about spirit, values, ideals, and conscience, and all that kind of thing. Whereas the mother is all about bodily stuff. This is bullshit. 100% bullshit is not only demeaning to women, they're somehow animals, while men retain culture and spirit themselves. It's actually demeaning to men, because being an animal is just as good as being spiritual. Do you know what I mean? So the father's body becomes really rather important here. this chair over here. I'd like to tell you a story about something that happened to me. A year ago, I was invited by an extremely progressive and influential major London newspaper to write a piece with them about positive aspects of a father's physical relationship with his daughter, because that's my bag, I know that that's what I can focus on. Positive aspects, you see, of the father's physical relationship with his daughter. Nearly everybody else in psychology is focusing on negative aspects of the father's physical relationship with his daughter. Or for that matter, focusing on negative aspects of the father's relationship with his daughter, like incest, or negative aspects of the father's violence and aggression in the family. So that to actually talk about the positive aspects of the father's body is itself something that interests newspapers. Anyway, they asked me to do this piece, and they told me that they had commissioned their top in-house graphic artist to do an illustration to accompany the piece. Anyway, the piece appeared, I think the headline was something like Aspects of a Father's Love, and was accompanied by an illustration of a really grotesque head, one-third boar, B-O-A-R, one-third wolf, and one-third human. I'm going to circulate in a moment. See, what had happened was that this illustrator, observed father and daughter, and got into a kind of knee-jerk reaction to this, and had done this to justify my fish talking started to move along the road. I'd like to show those in the middle. This is going to be a fun day for those of us who anti-Jungian day, those sitting in the middle of this audience, are going to get things made in the mode at the end. So that's me, I'm afraid. You can see roughly. Okay? Keep on passing around. Let this stuff circulate for another day and put it back at the end. I'm a cheapskate, I want to use it again. There'll be lots of these things, these graphics and various things going around. Now you see, that is what that guy heard in his mind's ear. Father, daughter, and that's what he came up with. At first, I was enraged. Then the editor rang up and said, oh, we're mortified here. We're terribly sorry. I don't know whether he's a journalist or not. So, but anyway. I felt staggeringly undercut by what had happened. I mean, even cut off, you know, frustrated by what happened. But then I began to see something. I got my sense of irony back. But here was the guy, you know, who's gone public on the national level in England about positive aspects of the father-daughter physical relationship, and that's the illustration they come up with. I thought, is there perhaps, this is where my Jungian bit does show, a kind of hidden meaning here. You know, maybe this guy and I, between us, found something rather important out. And I think we did. And what we found out is this. Any attempt to work the field of the positive father must accept that this attempt has to use the same pool of images and experiences that constitute the negative father. In other words, if the negative father is all about sex and aggression, so is the positive father. You can't actually say the positive father is a non-sexual, non-aggressive father. That's ludicrous. So, this guy's misunderstanding of what his task as illustrator of my piece was has led me to realize but it would be better to stay close to the negative stuff if we want to map out the positive potential in fathers. Now, this applies, by the way, whether you're thinking about your own father, his particular good side, or whether you're thinking of yourself as a good father to your children, if you happen to be a man, and indeed, as you'll see in a moment, if you happen to, later on in the talk, if you happen to be a woman. You really can't access the positive version by declaring a moratorium on the stuff of the negative version. The stuff of the good father and the stuff of the bad father is the same stuff. I wouldn't go so far as to say it's the right stuff, but it's the same stuff. Now that's a kind of introductory segment today. I'd like now to ask for your participation in a simple experiential exercise. I would like you to do this with your immediate neighbour, and if anybody is left over, well, just too bad. I thought you'd come and do it with me, but I hope it will work out. Yes, why don't you join us? I think mammon and psychology should work. Oh, sorry.
Right.
Okay, proto-mammon.
Now, this is a very simple exercise. Those of you that are familiar, you know, with psychology, with psychologizing, will get the niceties of the exercise. What I'm going to ask you to do is to turn to your neighbor and for 1 minute, one way, 1 minute, the other way, I want you, just by looking at them and using your intuition, to talk for 1 minute about what your fantasy is of what their father. This is where, you know, years of clinical experience go into this. Not to tell them to share, you know, American talk, to share. You know? Because asking people to share only encourages them to lie. Asking people to fantasize means that they're likely to tell the truth of a certain kind. Now, do you understand the exercise? You can decide which pecking side you would decide who you should go first. 1 minute of fantasy one way, about the father of the other person, and 1 minute of fantasy the other way. Okay, you go. Okay, it's time to change over. Stop in midstream and change over. Okay, everybody, just stop in the middle. Okay, let's.
Shh!
Let's review where we've got to, including that exercise, you know? Basically, I've talked about the difficulties in getting a positive father unless you somehow enter the room. And I asked you to do that exercise. Would you like to feedback a little bit? And I don't want to put people on the spot, but I know a couple of couples got completely stuck and they don't want to talk about that. Okay, so very helpful. But several couples really acted. Very active way. Would anyone like to talk about how it was? Yes.
It was embarrassing at first, but somehow just looking at someone, you could almost get a clear image that that you usually repress. You usually say that you can't be, but you want to kind of get a very specific image of one quality of the person's relationship. Whether it was true or not,
That's not truth is not psychology's concern. We'll still need more change. Anyone, someone else over here put their hand up. They wanted to. Yes.
I was just saying that
Yes. So you kind of went collective on it, really. I mean, you used a collective technique. You linked it to other people. Of course. Yes. That's right. Well, you've understood. That's the nature of the exercise. I mean, it is a projective technique. Mm-hmm.
What about
this
speaker stuff?
Yes. 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 Thank you. Someone else? Yes.
I remember that when I was very young, so I think I got stuck in accessing this.
Yes. Yes. I tend to talk about the presence of the absent father. Because, you can't conceptualize or imagine an absence in a good way. The absence becomes a presence. We'll talk in some detail about it.
There's certain things.
That's right. And this is, if you look at in terms of social statistics and demographic trend, it's something that psychologists have got to address. Single parent families, or two women bringing their children together, or indeed a man or so, or even a partner bringing their children. All these things have to be discussed and theorized about. You can't just ignore what's going on in the world. So that's right. The presence of the absent father is something we need to talk about.
Anyone else want to?
Yes.
Farmer is a very earthly person.
Yes.
And he's not a farmer, but that was a group of exactly where they are. And the part that's really interesting is that's something I'm really working on in color. And I appreciate what you said about that. Father Spirit, the way you look at that.
Yes. That has to be that kind of large cultural theme. Has to be the backdrop to this kind of discussion. It really does. Particularly, I would say, if you're coming at it from a Jungian point of view. From a Jungian point of view, you can't leave out the collective issues of being woman equal
his nature, man, his culture, his spirit. Really have to think about that.
I mean, one of the reasons I think why most of the imagery around the father's body is so negative is because it's almost the only way you can get the father into the animal place at all. You know, again, this is a Jungian point, if you like, that the unconscious absolutely wants in some form or other to connect with the father's body, but that the cultural avenues for doing that are also that negative because of cultural development that cut men off from nature, leaving that kind of stuff, earthy stuff, to women. It's rather a tragic story. Well, that, you see, the way men persecute women who are witches illustrates the full enormity of the split, because the witch is really the ultimate negative bodily construction about whatever else she is. So, I mean, men are very deep. It's not like it's been done to men. I mean, men have done this to themselves. Okay, let's move on, unless anyone's got a really pressing. And the idea of the exercise was to sensitize you to father issues, because anybody who's involved in psychology will know that this sort of level of discourse is much easier around mother. Much, much easier. I would have really liked to hear from the couples who got stuck. Maybe as the day goes on, they'll hear.
Yes?
Well, I know I've got stuck with absolute responsibility to fathers,
That's right, but obviously on the personal level, if you have strong negative feelings about your father, the whole thing is very difficult. On the other hand, one of the reasons why people who have very bad relationships with their fathers get stuck in an isolated place is that that whole spectrum, positive to negative, relating to the father, is simply not alive in our culture. The negative end is so alive, exaggerated, but once you get into that negative, you can never sort of pull back to the positive at all. There's no pool of imagery to awaken in yourself. And if you're doing clinical analysis with somebody, you will find very often that if they've had a very poor relationship with their father, even if there's a paternal transference going on, it will simply repeat the poverty-stricken, violent, distant, whatever it is, relationship with the father, that you don't get an awakening of the good father in the transference. In a way you do when you're working in the mother area. Someone's got a lousy relationship with their mother, and you're there as an available, non-judgmental analyst, you immediately become the recipient of a positive maternal transference. What happens with father transferences, for a long time very often, this is a very broad generalization, they simply repeat the negativity, because the positive end of the whole experience with father isn't in the trainings the analysts have had. So the analysts aren't sensitized to that. They don't know how to do it, in other words. So for those of you that are clinicians here, by the way, who is a practicing clinician of any kind? Oh, half, at least. So you'll be able to test some of this stuff out Monday morning. And the other half of you are probably in therapy or counseling. You'll be able to test it out whatever. Thank the Lord, I'll be on a plane.
Leave your address.
I did already. Okay, let's move on. This workshop is timely because of a massive change in human consciousness that's going on concerning men. What I'm doing is part of that particular change in consciousness. Now, something quite extraordinary has happened. For thousands of years, men have scrutinized the rest of the universe. There's simply been no question of men being scrutinized, because how could the scrutinizer be scrutinized? Only now, and it really is new, is a focus on men arising. Now, if you want to look at this in terms of intellectual history, the point is this, that because the viewpoint from which inquiry stems has been
assumed to be male, it simply never occurred to anybody that maleness should become that which is you have a viewpoint on. See what I mean? But something's happened to change it, because what's happened most important has been this particular cycle of feminism that has produced a feminist scholarship, a feminist intellectual inquiry, and a feminist version of all those things that we were not supposed to do, like research, think, argue, become professors, and so on and so on and so on. All that has meant that men have gone under the microscope. And you really cannot ignore how important that moment is in the evolution of Western consciousness. However, look at the way it's going. The men's movement in the States has, as somebody was saying to me in the discussion in the interview last night, has got a somewhat anti-female bias to it. But if you read accounts of what happens to men who attend men's movement workshops, live filming, movie, they actually sound like advertisements for conscription or joining the army in some way. The guys get a bit of backbone. Now, I think maybe the guys get a bit of backbone, need a bit of backbone, but the trouble is, there's a kind of risk that in attempting to track how boys become men, how to separate the men from the boys, one may get somewhat obsessed with separating the men from the women. So, although I strongly support that aspect of the men's movement, there are real problems with it. And I would like to offer this workshop, in a way, as a rectification of some of those. But, you know, the Bly Mead Hillman thing is only one part of what's going on in the men's movement. There is another whole strand of activity, psychosocial activity in the men's movement, that basically stresses that behind the tough, successful, careerist male is a sobbing little boy. Now, obviously, that's got problems too, but it's very different from the way Bly, etc., are taking the men's movement. And in Europe, accessing the baby boy behind the successful man is a much more widespread way it's going. And it's got enormous problems too, because if you spend too much time on the sobbing of the baby boy, you miss the fact of male power in the world. So there's problems with that approach too. Then there's a third strand in the men's movement, which I talked a bit about last night, which is the attempt to set up non-competitive, non-hierarchical patterns of male social organization. And that extends into the relations between them. So there's an awful lot of different things going on. There's the Bly attempt to find the core of an initiatory process which has been lost in our society. The risk of that is it tends to a kind of romanticization, even a kind of potential fascism. Then there's the sobbing little boy type of approach. The problem with that is it ignores the fact that men have power. I mean, we're not just sobbing little boys. We're also the powerful tycoons that we seem to be. There's a kind of social unreality about that, even if it's on a psychological level. And finally, there are attempts, somewhat idealistic perhaps, to create non-competitive, non-hierarchical styles of organization. Now, all this is going on. But basically, if you think about it across the board, the central theme is men are bad. Let me give you some examples. Circulate these. This is a book that's been very successful in England, I don't know if it's been there, by Heather Formaney, called Men the Darker Continent. She's a young man. Men the Darker Continent. And it's, you know, why are men so fearful of intimacy? Why are they so inadequate as husbands and fathers? 2 decades of feminism compelled women to question their place in the man's world. Now a practicing psychoanalyst turned the spotlight on men and on the darkest corners of the male side. It's probably not available, but the point is not the book. The point is, I'm sending this thing about the iconographic spirit. Okay?
I won't go.
No, it's a lousy book. It's totally one. But if you try to understand this thing as a cultural production, rather than do I agree with this book or don't I agree with this book, this is very typical. You know, men are under the microscope, and they're basically diseased. It's very. And they are. She's not wrong. She's just one-sided.
Now, here's another one. This is a book called Male Fantasies by Klaus Schulz, which is about the inner world of SS soldiers. As far as we've worked out so many years after the war. So that's going to be even more than they were expecting.
Send them around.
Heather Formani. Heather Formani. She's a Jungian. Men, the darker continent. It's kind of, I find an absolutely fascinating image because, you know, what does it mean? Men are the new niggers somehow? Negroes? And that's it. That's the association. The dark continent is Africa. They're even darker than the Africans. Yeah. And again, I repeat, she's not wrong. So that this is what this is this you have to have this kind of stuff in your mind when you're thinking about God. Now you understand what I'm asking you to do here is not like participate in a male psychology workshop. I'm asking you to take, if you like, a stance in relation to these materials that are floating around the world. Let them impact on you, reflect on what's going on. Because
every time there's a split, you'll sure as hell find that the other side of the split
wants to seek its place in the sun. Now, I've been trying to say that we've reached a crucial point of human consciousness. Men are under the microscope, and mostly what people are finding is that the result is bad. But at exactly the same time, it's going to be quite fascinating psychologically. The new man arises. Doesn't he? Here's the new man. He's partly his baby in this picture.
Okay, this is now the interesting thing about this, of course, capitalistic aspect.
Because this is an advertisement for to catalogue baby clothes. It's coming along the line.
Don't go on too long.
Okay, the company in England is called Mothercare. Or
pass something else along the line. This is a magazine for the Bay Area called Nurturing News. Of course, it is the Nurturing Man.
Can I leave along the line too, please? You see? If we just look at the first two things I said, men, the dark continent, sexual fantasies, and then you look at these next two things that are coming along, you'll see what I'm getting at. It's a historical moment, a window of opportunity that is really being inadequately pursued and taken up. Because we've got hooked into this split. You know, the old man, this kind of savage beast, who rapes his daughters, beats up his sons, and despoils, exploits, and ruins the planet. Again, he does exist. And then on the other hand, the new man, who bathes his baby, who apparently has no hair on his chest whatsoever. And indeed, according to Robert Bly, it's supposed to be very unhappy. I'm not so sure that it is very unhappy. I think what it is just split off from at least half of what's involved in being alive today. So you can see that by circulating this material, what I'm trying to do is sensitize you to a split. But don't think it's just a split. There is also a wonderful moment of opportunity now. But it's clear we can put men under the microscope.
Can I have a question?
Yes.
May
I? Yes, please.
I wonder why most of the people
absolutely. I think the difficulty is that a movement is emerging that may be out of control. And I don't think, obviously, a blind in human sexual attachment cannot. But that if you look at some of the imagery and ideas of, that are being put forward, you look at people's personal testimonies of how they experience the various groups and workshops that they've been to. And then you look at youth and other movements in the fascist era, you will find an uncanny overlap of individual. Now, I support focus on men, I really do. I also support the basic thinking behind the fly word, which is the complete absence of societal structures of initiation, the male mode. The snag is that buried in there somewhere is a romanticization of the glorification of something. That seems to me difficult to feel. After all, that particular branch of the Netflix, which as I say, isn't exactly short of a platform for its view. But amongst many men, there are two kinds of worries that I'm going to have about to say. Without in any way diminishing my personal responsibility, I would say that I'm not going to question.
We talked about this last night, but
yeah.
I say I'm sensitive about the group and I'm personally with you. That's what I'm saying. I would say that the local case law is in your field. What is the
name
of the group? The word bachelor means a state that may become void of this cap, just by capitalism. And then it is really it actually thinks that the power structure that you're talking about, the shift as it comes as a shift away from the economic political focus that's moved so much. It's moved over towards the women and children and other places and men and the reason that folks think was it that they're actually feeling power from that center. So fascism is anywhere, it's the corporate structure that you apply back to male, they're carrying themselves. So.
But don't forget, what I was doing was to go back to the question, was to list the problems with all the different aspects of the men's movement. I mean, I think there were terrific problems in other kinds of work in male psychology. As I said, for example, the idea that men need to access their baby side leaves out what you just said now, which is that they're implicated in all the corporate structures and so forth. So, yes?
I wonder if one of the things we're stumbling around about is the lies and wishes to be involved in the deep, savage, and I think that is.
He doesn't discuss this episode, it's an adaptation of the wild, which he says is essentially unnatural.
I think you'll find child. I think you'll find the savage male under lies. Connection to putting it. I think perhaps that's the.
Oh, no, we're not running into a camera. We're running into the center of things.
No, too quick. We're in the conflict. But he does go out of his way to point out that that's not what he's trying to do.
Well, you can say that it's not what he's trying to do, but I think.
But you see, I'm going to comment on the process, and I'm going to pull no punches here. You know, this kind of textual exegesis of what the leading voice said is itself worrying. Yes?
What is the name of that?
Well, I think that, well, I didn't, yeah, because I happen to think that's the one to go with. That's the honest.
I had that suspicion.
I will criticize it, that it's idealistic, that it's unrealistic, that it ignores, you know, certain sort of features in human nature or something like that. And the other thing I think that's about it is that it, if you like, it devalues things like this, you know, authoritative decision making and leadership. In other words, if a group of people are trying to work cooperatively, we just see, for example, when we try to order the sandwiches for lunch, you know, it takes, and psychologists are the very worst at this, it just takes forever to get it together, you know. For example, I'm an analyst, so I always work with the here and now. You know, people came up to 20 minutes late today, that's fine, it's a new place, West Coast, and we're young, and the rest of it. But, and this is the point, in a kind of, you know, laid-back, non-competitive, non-hierarchical world, that's fine, people come whenever they like. But you could say, what's missing is, this is when it starts, you know? So that's the criticism of the second criticism of it, of course, is that I, as a person, have not attained that to a particularly marked degree. I'm not particularly good at working for it. So, you know, that will be the kind of issues around it. I mean, I'm quite good at getting dialogue and interaction going, but I don't actually sit on any committees anywhere ever. So, it's a good point. You're quite right to pick me up on that. But don't make this into an assessment of the men's movement. What I'm trying to do is to show you that a workshop on fathers cannot put itself off from all this kind of thing. And if you want, at the end, to hear more about my particular live aspect of the men's movement, I'd be happy to do that, because I'm going to be a substantial piece about this. I've also been to this workshops and his events in England, pretty much too. So I mean, it's not just academic. Yes? Circulating these materials has to do with the basic idea that you cannot get to the good father if you don't also somehow trudge through imagery and experience of being the bad father. And I worry that if we clean up the act too much, we'll leave the field of psychology altogether. I mean, we'll just become through wishing. I think that there is something in male psychology and behavior that is definitely negative. Fathers identify with self-love, but exactly the same kind of issues, as we will see as we gradually start the workshop, will be visible when we come to look at the positive father in more detail. Yes.
I guess I'd like to go back to the image relate an image that a friend of mine. Was taking care of his daughter, and he said, the worst possible male fantasy is taking care of his daughter. And then he was up one night with her, and his wife was sleeping, and she latched on and depressed. And he said, that was the worst possible male fantasy.
No, the second one. Yeah, John, see, this is an amazing question. You know, how she's trying to come to me and nurture the father. And I know that that path is the only one I know. This is what we're going to do. Not in my own way, too much, yeah. Same with it. First of all, one of the investments that the first is. Secondly, the parent agreement that you have got something else which don't get sucked by the world. It shouldn't be sucked by the daughter or other girl there. That thank you, because I checked on the other one. This is the point. You simply can't separate good. It's great, because you've fleshed it. You simply can't separate the nurturing father from a father who mouth butts. The imagery, the bodily acts have something in common. The two things are completely different. We evaluate them, judge them, wish for them quite differently. But where it really counts is sometimes the relationship. This is what I want. I mean, the men's movement stuff is to locate the workshop, not to put it back to the engagement. Can't be a nurturing father if you don't also think quite a lot about familiarity. Yeah. Yeah.
Just one point. If you look at the back of the Nurturing Times, Nurturing News, sorry, you'll see an advertisement, I promise where they are now, so you read my copy. It says, none custodial parents, the easy way to stay close to your kids, even if you're far away. Divorce is tough on kids and on you, whether you live 2 miles away or 2,000, is a way to keep the love and the inner. It's called the written connection, take it into communication system, and it's easy to let those kids know you're still there for them. The written connection contains 120 pieces of correspondence and 30 portfolios and instructions on how to make every week of the year special by mail. Each week costs you less than $1 and requires only 5 to 25 minutes of your time. The result is a year's work of cherished correspondence to your kids and project kids. It is endorsed by physicians, psychologists, family counselors, parents, and children. After all, a phone call can't be cut from your pillow at night or next. Now, I don't want to do that. But it gets me in the I both want to laugh and cry at the same time. And this actually goes back to the one where you and I got to. It's a very, very difficult thing. I mean, that is an attempt, isn't it, to, for someone to be a good father according to a patented system. And I think that's good.
I just have to offer another example here of the absurdity of mobile pop culture. A friend of mine, a songwriter, wrote a song that I think usually identified more from the women's point of view, the mother's point of view, but I think it equally be applied for the father. I Want a Video Baby is the song. I want a video baby. And the idea is, you know, I can shut it off, well, I can turn the volume down, I can use slow motion, I can put it in freeze frame. It's really funny, but of course very sardonic.
Yes. Okay, the last thing I want to do before we have a break, and what I'll do after that is summarize where we've got to, is to try to open a discussion about how on earth we can talk about it. See, I can look at your on your sheet, you can take my word that it's there. I said, is the father male? Probably noticed that. This is the father male. Now, this is the final thing we need to sort of look at before we can say right, well, we've got a basis from which to do something. Is the father male? Oh, and I'll be asking you to do a quick exercise as well. So we're going to already run a few minutes behind schedule. I'm sorry. Is the father male? Now, first of all, what do I mean by asking the question? You see, one of the great difficulties in all of this is that when we talk about the Father, we really can't be sure whether we're talking about the literal flesh and blood anatomical male person who has children, or, as many psychological theories do, whether we're talking about some kind of metaphor, the metaphorical father, implying a set of qualities, attributes, and behaviors which perhaps anybody of whatever sex can do. Now, this balance between the literal father has to be a man with children, and the metaphorical father, who can be a woman in relation perhaps to another woman with children. That's the kind of range of possibility. This has to be gone into. All I can do is tell you my place in yours. I used to be extremely precise when I talked and wrote about the father, about whether I meant talking about a man who has children, or I'm talking about a metaphor. But I made that kind of intellectual commitment. I was not going to be caught up in confusion. I began to realize that there was a confusion here that I wanted to be caught in. Now, what is this confusion? The confusion is quite simply one of language. We don't really. Oh, I see. Sorry, you're throwing me. Find the scene over there. What was I talking about?
You wanted.
Yes, thank you very much. I began to see that there was a real value here in not knowing at any one moment whether you are talking about the literal father or the metaphorical father. Let me give you some examples. I've done a lot of work with single-parent families. I did an actual research project with them. The results got published. And it seemed very clear to me that in spite of claims to the contrary, there are no absolutely inevitably negative results in terms of the psychology of the children from single parent. Now, there are problems for single parent families, and some of them are psychological. Often they have to do with the way in which the parents get up, that's what happens. But the majority of problems for single parent families are social, cultural, and above all, economic. And the major economic problems for single parent families in the Western world, I think, contribute to the psychological problems that they may face. And until we adequately resource single-parent families, we simply do not know whether these trendy theories about the undercut, really have any mileage anymore or not. I feel quite passionately about this. It seems to me that in a family where a woman is essentially the only parent, it seems somehow that she and the children work on and manage issues to do with father-child relations. Now, they may not work in them in the same way as they would if the father was there. It may be more stressful. Quite frankly, I don't think that even two-parent families find all straightforward and easy going. My practice at home is full of people who had a completely normal family background and they're crazy as hell. But now, the point here is not just to say that the father must be understood to some extent, or if it's in a single-parent family, father is where there's no father. Father issues seem to be dealt with, whether by the woman's friends or male teachers, or indeed purely from animus or other kind of internal sources. Clearly, that it starts to deliteralize the father and taking them on that quality level. Something more important is that single parent families and other marginal styles of family organization really get revealed into the laboratory in which work for the rest of us is being done. I mean, I'm particularly interested in what I call transgressive styles of family organization. Gays bringing up children, single fathers, single mothers, and so on, because all the conventional wisdoms of that psychology are totally challenged by people who are doing well. And they shouldn't be doing well, you see, but they are doing well. Or at least they're doing no worse. Now, this is controversial stuff, because the implications of it are, for example, that a lesbian couple really are an appropriate team for the bringing up of children, which means lesbian couples should be able to foster, to adopt, by custody cases, and the like, and gay couples too. So there are real social, political, policy-type implications from stressing the metaphorical end. At the same time, though, you can't just have a metaphor of the father without, in your mind's eye, seeing a man. The word father has the implication and the association of man. And this is what I mean about the completely different dynamic, because it gives us a clue as to how to construct a language in which to talk about him. But it's clear, everything I can say about him, parents, gays, and so forth, that the problem is language. I don't want to settle terminologically. You see, I've got friends down the coast, in the Bay Area, who talk about sky parents and earth parents. Yeah? You know, not mother and father, sky parents and earth parents. This is shit. This is nonsense. You have to go on, if you're serious about this, and not just playing New Age games, you have to work through, struggle through, thousands of years of tradition, cultural overlay, social system, and social reality. Father, which I've just established in my perspective, not yours, is a metaphor. At the same time, I'm also establishing that I can't divorce the word from a male. So we're left with this. We can't do much about it. I mean, I have tried to go for some cumbersome postmodern formulations, which I still think are valid. The father of whatever sex, the mother of whatever sex, the son of whatever sex, and the daughter of whatever sex. And that's really still at the back of my mind when I talk about the father. I do think about the father and whatever said, but at the same time, I have to say, I don't know exactly in what respects being fathered by a male and being fathered by a female is different. I mean, people can think about different bodies and different skills and so on, but then deep down psychologically, I don't know. Perhaps there are some differences. Probably there are. But how clear-cut are they? How massive are they? That's a very, very open question. Now, the problem is this. What I've been saying, on the one hand, completely dismantles the heterosexist frame in which nearly all psychological discussions about the father are constructed. If the father is a man and the partner is a woman, the whole thing is done heterosexistically, if you like. And it's done in terms of sexuality, so it means it's complex, it's usually played out in terms of sexuality. It's how it's normally taught. And of course, it's not wrong, it's just that's how it is for most people. At the same time, I've tried to show you that heterosexuality isn't the only thing. So where are we left with this? Well, I want to give you quite a complicated theory here, which I hope I can put in simple terms. Let's take ordinary psychological themes like trust. Instead of truth, it's called trust. Trust. Now, you look up trust in any primer of developmental psychology and you'll find mother. Mother-infant relationship is typically, classically, the relationship we are told in our textbooks and in our life experience, probably, where trust is worked on. Now, nobody is seriously going to say that trust is missing from the father-child relationship. It isn't. But this is the point. It's extremely difficult, because of all this cultural confusion and social history that I've been talking about, it's extremely difficult to talk about trust between father and child without first wading through, seeing through the filter of the mother-child relationship. In other words, you can't begin to talk about father-child trust until you've approached it, because it's been embedded in the culture for years, through the filter of mother-child trust. Or to take another example, take incest. Now, obviously, incest goes on between any members of the family, brother-sister, or mother-daughter. There's every conceivable combination of incest. Yet, the one that our culture, against our psychology textbooks, teach us about most prominently is father-daughter incest. So, father-daughter incest starts to become the filter through which we can access other kinds of incest. I would say it's the only way we can actually do it. Do you see what I'm getting at? What I'm trying to do is build our prejudices and the way we've all been educated into a new look at these things, rather than announcing that the old way is over and a new way is going to begin, Earth Parents and Sky Parents. That's not my way. I think my way is much more difficult, but I hope it's more honest and I hope it's deeper. Take any theme you like, think of the family relationship and identify that theme. Don't rule out the application of that theme to other relationships in the family, but accept that you can only get at them through the one that is culturally sensitized. So, for example, when I start to talk about the father-daughter incest connection, which I will be doing after the break, I'm in no way saying there is no father-son incest, mother-daughter incest, mother-son incest. What I'm saying is the dynamics of the father-daughter incest situation and theorizing about that cannot be overlooked or avoided when you want to look at other incest situations. Is this getting to be clear? So it's not that I'm completely hooked up in old-style heterosexism frameworks to think about father. What I am saying is that I acknowledge their power and their continuity in me as well as everybody else. So I, instead of dismissing them, I'm doing what analysts ought to do, which is work through them. If you like, it is an opus contra naturam that I'm doing. A work against nature. Meaning, in this case, not nature outside of the natural environment, but the received wisdom and the cultural tradition of thousands and thousands. Okay, let me pull this whole thing together. Well, actually, first let me ask you, are there any questions about these last remarks about is the father male and the language problems? Did you follow it, or was it too abstract?
Yes.
some way. Yeah. Anyone feel it was happening? Be honest, because I can't take it to the universe. Seriously, does anyone feel that it didn't quite grasp, particularly the last point about the filters? Please, it's very important to me, and I've come a long way, but you actually say you didn't get it.
I didn't get exactly what your question said about her.
Oh, I see. Well, it's a book.
That was setting up your point. I didn't get the different attributes.
Yes. Well, basically, all the kinds of conventional nurturing things to do with the children's bodies and their health can be done by the parents, if you know that. So you call the parents of doing that the earth parent. And things like values, ideals, ambitions, conscience, spiritual education, religious education, that's done by the sky parent. So that, quite frankly, the sky parent basically the old self father they made. But my whole point here is that I like confusion. Not just because, you know, it's a soft option. That confusion is the hard option. Stay with that and see what kind of language and what kind of theoretical and imaginal stuff comes up. That's what I want to do. So that's basically, you know, I don't think you solve it by listing all the things that fathers traditionally do under the sky and all the things that mothers traditionally do under earth. I think what you do is you talk about or you think about the father of whatever sex and accept that's an extremely confusing but nevertheless realistic situation that we are in. Then you think about the single parent family, the relationship couples, the fact they're letting you know of it, and so you realize there is a mess. Anyone else not so clear about it? No. Okay. So let me round off this session with an exercise, which is kind of an interesting exercise. You know, I've been talking a lot about the split between the horrible old man, you know, of the darker continent and the savage sexual fantasies, and the new man who fathers a baby and buys into a patented system for communicating with his child after divorce by mail. And he's a new man that's advertising nurturing types. So he's a new man for us. What I'm going to ask you to do is, you're a man, to assess yourself on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being old man, 10 being new man. And if you're a woman, to assess the most significant male in your life, let's say 1 being old man, 10 being new man. But to do it out loud as we go around the group. Again, I mean, it's quite interesting, of course, because for women it's a little less straightforward. For men it's a little more real. You get it? Yes? So the five have been. Let me tell you where if one is old and 10 is new, I guess I'm about 4. So should we start here? Let's take it quite slowly. And I think I'm wondering also, can you all see each other? I wonder if the person who could stand up and say it.
Okay. I was going to do the average of that. Even though I appreciate and understand in some ways the way you wrote the role it has been moved, but I think my question is where do I live? I live in an origin of the living in the youth, and I read it much in the middle of the shift back or meaning being lost.
So that's a kind of worked through file rather than a claimed file.
Yeah.
It's not
spontaneous.
Yeah. That's okay. Good. All right. So, thank you.
Just stand up so people can see. I think we are probably going to be together, aren't we? We're all by standing. Yeah. Go ahead. What is old?
I would say that I'm probably a 2. I consider myself to be a very traditional impulse. But I'm probably modified in terms of confusing that cultural.
So the sort of things I think about the metaphorical thought is I wouldn't even do it, so I probably don't do it.
Okay.
Okay.
Good.
Yeah. That's the way ahead. Absolutely, that's very encouraging to me, that a person can be a 2, i.e. almost at the extreme old man end of this, and yet buy into the next stuff. And if, you know, given that politicians are around 1 or 2, they don't buy into the next stuff when they, you know, don't make these agreements. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. When I
first did this some exercise, I think it was like in London, maybe it's massive.
And we had a long. First of all, people didn't understand it. I mean, clearly, you've understood it.
In America, you know, the
but they were terribly resistant. They didn't understand it, and they kept getting it wrong. You know, which end is which, and so on and so on. And should we do it? How can you do it if you do it? It's trivial. It's, you know, on and on and on and on and on. Eventually, we started. And remember that we're doing here, one is old and one is new. And one bloke, one chap, got up and said, well, you know, when you first suggested this exercise, I thought I was 8, but after all this pissing around, I'm 2. So I was really hoping people would ask a whole bunch of stupid questions about it and generally make trouble. But it didn't happen. Okay, please.
If the 5 to 10 is pushed to one side and the one to 5 is pushed the other way, he's in the abyss.
I think I prefer the London style of resistance. Fine, okay.
West Coast.
Yeah,
West Coast.
Okay, this is obviously going to take a long. This day is going to. The timetable is now complete.
I imagine it will go something like this, you know. 3, 4. You didn't think everyone would make a bar mitzvah speech?
And please don't fuck around with this. This is about the father, not the mother. That's probably why I reacted, why I couldn't, you know, when you went in for the housekeeping. And I remember I said at the beginning about competition between mother and father. I'm sure, well, you know, the residual old man father in me got completely thrown by sandwiches. Please. You know, this is very interesting. I mean, I'll respond to some if anyone's comment here gets me going. This is terribly interesting because, you know, sociologists tell us that silence, but in spite of all the new man stuff, nothing's changed in the home at all. Men still don't do what they ever did. But you see, when you're a psychologist, these social systems, you know, how many times have I heard this? How many times have I said that? How many times have I changed the diet? This is not the point. The point is there's been a real change in what I would call the aspirational atmosphere, which is we do latch onto it.
remember, he's the most significant man in your life. It doesn't have to be, for example, you're in a gay or in a lesbian relationship. You know, the most significant man might be a male friend or father.
You mean more than five? Mm-hmm. Right towards ten.
When I first thought about it, I sort of immediately placed myself at five, and I realized that was not out of any sense of not wanting to choose, but kind of a sense of confusion. I'm aware of times in my life that I'm probably more toward the one than more toward the ten. It's the struggle and the confusion and the uncertainty that I had at the time, and then I realized I had to be even more honest with myself in my life, to sort of live out this, this cultural fantasy of what it means to be a citizen.
Yeah.
When you first put the question out, I immediately thought eight or nine, because I'm the youngest of three sons. My father was kind of a disappearing alcoholic, and I don't have much fun, and well, I'm artistic and that kind of thing, so I'm not flighty. But now I find myself in a household where I'm the chief breadwinner, and I'm always the one who's doing all the outside chores, and I'm real focused on my business, so I see myself moving back towards like six in the fall.
Yeah, this is very interesting. I would say that my first thought when I was with my father was definitely the one. So for a long time, the actions that I was taking up with, but I realized that like having responsibilities that I just would fall back. I would say,
I don't think my parents, and I think I think that it's very, I didn't have a problem with that, but I think, you know, but I think it's a real color as well. I mean,
I think I prefer the London style.
You know, they'll hand me a stone, so I want to know.
Well, there's something else too, isn't it? You know, I asked you for bread and you gave me a stone.
My point is, please help me on that.
Yeah.
It is amazing how this exercise. So I never, that's something else I hadn't thought of. But the woman would not only answer how she evaluates the most beautiful men in the world, but tell us how she thinks he would evaluate. Is there no end to human ingenuity?
Well, I was tossing around, and my husband was for 3 years, and the scale for our children came in. He started off being probably a 3, but over years the fathering has changed. And right now, and the last child was a son. He's
4, right.
I wrote a poem by the ninth of people dying. So now I am imitating the man which is emerging from me.
Yeah. That's right. That last bit is so
good.
Well, I'm trying to think about my stress of the Lord. Started off as a child in a murdering situation.
Yes, I mean, that links up with the two guys over here. But what it shows is the great difficulty in saying there is a phenomenon called masculinity at all. You see what I'm
talking about?
Virtual. That's right, it moves all over the place. So it's very hard to talk about it if you've already put it into one.
When I
left
out of it, my mind was, I had a piece of one my
Move on.
Well, I don't have any kids, but I see myself as being a little bit closer, very much. My wife is out in the world, not in corporate work, but I've been at this community for a lot better than that, working incredible long hours, and I had to check my office, and so I had to put myself up.
Yeah, like this chap here, kind of work through 5 rather than sort of, you know, oh, I'm in the middle. Yeah, that's right. Thanks.
I can't put myself on this field. I live on the farm.
Yeah.
Three and a half. All right, thank you.
The same problem with the period also, when I do say that, because both polarities are
That's what emerged in London. And that's exactly what emerged in London. But instead of the, your point about paradigm not working, what people actually realized was that this is an inner spectrum to which one relates, rather than a spectrum crudely situated on. In other words, you don't do first time, you situate yourself. You come to the relation. So that's exactly right. That's right. And then you see you get by inscribing yourself on a spectrum, you, as it were, earn the right to work the whole thing, or to think about the whole thing and relate to the whole thing. That's what we found. But let's see if that's worked. We can discuss amongst ourselves in the table.
I see that I'm constantly looking at the beauty of the pot. And so I think of myself as a pot, but I know I'm a sweet all the
onwards and upwards. What does it add? What? Add something?
I attribute my father and my grandfather as eight at least. But let's say my grandmother, she was not my age, and I think she was going to have my father.
Well, that you hear from the couch all the time.
I see myself as a set of four.
I too kind of feel like a paradigm is just a little bit. And I think I've kind of fluctuated around the situation.
Again, the point that there's masculinity is not masculinity.
I think that came along with either.
I raised my first son within 3 months on by myself. So he was two. And when I remarried, I was very resentful that my wife was breastfeeding, because I couldn't wait for her to stop, so I had to take care of the kids to kind of tease her out for a day. And I still have some of that, you know, and I do work with all women, and I do sit with women while they're giving birth to babies, and so I feel that, but I also have such extreme resentment sometimes of men or women who are competing with me in that way.
You see, in a way, amongst other things, it was really different to all these maps. There's some things that you have to do, some of what you can do, but in the description, the very good is how it's operated. You know, unless you have the text,
just a good vague idea of the universe. What's the question? What are the
That's why that breastfeeding image, when you put it back to the glacier, was so disturbing, because I wanted, I take shots or something like that. theoretically, I could, but then, just kind of the
relationship. So you're also involved in the metaphorical work, the answer is, have shots, and get breasts. Mother. You are looking at that. I think there is another observation. It may not be time to look at effective contribution of psychoanalysis or British psychology to this, but absolutely nothing about the direct relationship. Yet, newspapers and magazines are fully sure about what's happening. It's actually mostly a response to people in psychology to allow that phenomenon. But that's the point, by the way, that's been like that. The point of doing this kind of exercise is to show that the sort of theorized reference system that we have for almost every other issue.
I guess I have to say on the two random lines that in some of the relationships in my life, mostly the outer ones, which is my family, where I learned in my family, I'm hearing movement, people coming in. But, and that's not my question. What I'm finding also, though, is that I'm trying to do is spread my family, but part of
remember I said the stuff of the and that is the end of the tape. Copyright CG Jung Society Seattle and the speaker. All rights reserved. No copying, please.